Excuse me. Excuse me, is someone out there not having a good time? Somebody crying out there in the darkness? Somebody crying.
I'm sorry.
Can we get her a mic and a spotlight? Tommy, can we run her a mic? Get Lady to run her a mic.
Are you serious?
Yeah, run her a mic. What's your name?
Who cares?
Right.
Well, I care. What's your name?
Right.
Penny.
Did you say Peggy?
No, my name's Penny. Penny Pretty. It doesn't matter. It's not important. I just danced. I just sponged up a little too much Fat 69. That's all. I'm down on my last nickel in this lousy town. And they wouldn't even take my luggage in hock. I lost my room at the Y this morning.
Hey, no. Don't be mean. We don't have to be mean. Because, remember, no matter where you go, there you are.
Quiero la noche de amor.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Stuff We've Seen. I am Jim, and now, ladies and gentlemen, let me lay on you a great entertainer, a beloved humanitarian, the president of the Peter Himes Fan Club, and friend for almost 30 years, Teal! How's it going, buddy?
Pretty good. How you doing? That intro reminded me of Ben Vereen in... You know what I'm talking about, yeah, right? Just, and all that jazz?
Yeah. You might have been ripped off. I don't know.
Well, no, I loved it. When he's doing it in the death scene, he says, and here he is. What's the character's name? Gideon. Joe Gideon, a so-so humanitarian, a terrible father, like all these things.
Yeah, I figured you wouldn't appreciate it if I had used that version. It was a so-so entertainer, not much of a humanitarian, and this cat was nobody's friend. Here he is. Here he is on his last day of life or something. Joe Gideon.
Ladies and gentlemen, let me lay on you, a so-so entertainer, not much of a humanitarian, and this cat was never nobody's friend. In his final appearance on the great stage of life, you can applaud if you want to, Mr. Joe Gideon.
Oh, man. Well, we're going to have to talk about that movie at some point.
We will, because it is great. I was just watching a few minutes of it earlier this morning, and that ending...
Wait, were you... Oh, yeah, because you were... prepping your answer.
Yeah, you know, I was looking and then, you know, all that jazz for our early adopter fans out there is a favorite of mine, and I believe it is a favorite of yours.
Absolute favorite of mine, yes.
And, you know, there's so much that you could talk about, but this ending of the film has got to be one of the most perfect endings in all of film.
Yeah, it is, I think, the greatest death scene on film.
It's this awesome grand finale. And it's just, again, I don't want to bore people at the moment who haven't seen it, but maybe you should go out and see it. But there is about 1,000 different things going on in that film that you can talk about and enjoy. And it's just from the cinematography to the editing to the framing of that film.
It can be a little hard to take. It's not a life affirming story.
Speak for yourself, young man. Hard to take. It's
a downer.
You know, it is one of those films that maybe it's different if you come to it as an adult watching it. When I first saw it, I was obsessed with this film. A lot of times when I'd see a preview for a movie as a kid, I would just want to see it. Or a poster would intrigue me. And what intrigued me about All That Jazz when it came out in the very tail end of 1979 was Roy Scheider was in it.
Right. And yes, of course.
I had probably just been exposed to Jaws in the last year, and I was obsessed because I loved Roy Scheider's character. Right. And so he was in it, and I wanted to see it, but it was rated R, of course. We've been over that. And my dad, I think, saw it, and he came back and was, I didn't really like that movie.
It's no Jaws.
It's no Jaws. It's a much different film. But, as a kid, you get attracted to certain performances and acting, and you just like that actor, and you want to see more movies. And he really wasn't in a ton of films. He was in The French Connection, The Seven Ups, Marathon Man.
But Marathon Man was a smaller part, too, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, but, you weren't seeing, he wasn't this marquee guy that was in tons of films. So, this came out, and the poster just had those, All That Jazz and lights. And I didn't know who Bob Fosse was. So that wasn't really what attracted me to it. But a few years later, when got my first VCR and the video store had a copy of it, I rented it. And it was a day that was really, really snowy. And I was super sick. And we had a day off from school because of the snow. And I put it on and watched it. And I think that was the reaction that you mentioned earlier, that it was certainly not what I was expecting.
Yeah.
I just thought it was I thought it was this guy who does dance productions or something, and it was about his life, and I thought it was going to be filled with lots of dance numbers and music, which I guess it was, but they were certainly not they weren't the dance numbers I was expecting. and I couldn't really get into the movie, and I was left. It was a downer because at the end, I'm going to give the film away. He doesn't make it.
I think I already said that when I said it was one of the great death scenes.
Yeah, I guess so. Well, we didn't say who dies, but spoiler alert: Roy Scheider's character, Joe Gideon, who really is as close to a film persona of Bob Fosse as there ever could be.
It's semi-autobiographical, except that Bob Fosse didn't die for a few more years.
No, that's true.
But he did. But he died at age 60. And he died young.
And he died kind of exactly the way his character did, a massive heart attack. Bob Fosse was a 4-pack-a-day unfiltered cigarette smoker.
Yes.
And he, he popped pills. He drank too much. He was a party guy. This was based
and worked himself to the bone.
Yeah. Talk about very reflexive. It's really his story was in 1973 or four. He had a Broadway production going. He was editing Lenny and something else that he was doing.
And he basically I think he had a heart attack.
Yeah. He almost died.
Yeah. He almost died. And so this film is about that.
Yeah. And so it's all that. Took me a few years to really understand. And at the end, I remember I was left at, this show stopping number. He dies, which I was not expecting that he was going to die.
Not at all. No.
And then, there's this thing where at the very end, his bag is zipped up and it's over. And then the credits come up and the song, There's No Business Like Show Business. And, it was probably when I was 13 or 14. And I just was not that great a movie. So a few years later, when I was at school for my freshman year, I was in California. And this place had a very nice movie theater on campus. And they showed a lot of movies. There was it was film school there. And they were showing in one of the classes All That Jazz, and I sat in on the class, because you could always do that for free there.
Right.
And I think it was a class on editing. So if, for those who've seen All That Jazz.
Yeah, great film for that.
Perfect.
Also, it's about editing. He's editing a movie while, you know.
Exactly. And so now I see it, and I'm 18, and it absolutely blew me away.
Yeah.
It was like I hadn't seen the movie.
I think I, because I saw it also probably in the early 80s on VHS. I think I had a similar reaction where I just didn't quite get it. I didn't know what Jessica Lange was doing there.
I think, you know, it's funny. When you're 14, maybe you just don't get everything. It was pretty apparent.
Yeah.
I didn't understand her character at all then.
Neither did I. It wasn't until I saw the film a few years later that I think somebody told me. And I was like, oh, okay, then now it all makes sense.
Yeah, and when I watched it the second time, see, that's where I think some movies you do need a second time, because as you're going through it for a first experience, things are confusing. And yeah, then you get to the end.
You're trying to find your footing, and in a movie like this, it's not very sure footing all the time.
Exactly. And then you go and see it a second time, and now that you've got it all under your belt, so now when you watch it again, it's very apparent. Oh, I see who Jessica Lange is.
Yeah.
And you love it.
Yeah, and it all comes together. And anyhow, if you haven't seen this movie, you should see it 3 or 4 times.
And you know what? And I think anybody, you know, well, I pause. I recognize that there are people that won't necessarily like movies that I like. I find it really enjoyable, and I feel that there's a lot to it. It's a very complex movie, and it gives you a lot.
And I recommended it to some people a few years ago, and they hated it.
Well, I don't like those people already.
So while we're talking about Bob Fosse, I just need to say a movie I have not seen.
Sure.
Is Sweet Charity.
I have seen portions of that, but I would have to confess that I, too, have not seen from beginning to end the entire film, Sweet Charity.
Okay. I've seen every other Bob Fosse film.
You mean all four others?
All four others, yes.
You know, and it's a shame. That's one of those things where, he obviously didn't live as long as some, but he also didn't make a lot of movies. I mean, his hands were in many pies.
Well, movies were just one of the things he was doing.
Yeah, and if you watch all of his films after Sweet Charity, there's definitely a sort of thread of things that he was interested in and a style that he created. You know, you'll see the way Lenny is, and then you see All That Jazz and then see Star 80. There's a lot of similarities in how he puts those films together.
And he really does have a directorial voice.
Oh, absolutely. I mean,
I think it comes through. Yeah.
That's why, again, it's a shame that he only made so many films, because when you see a Bob Fosse movie, it's inescapable that anybody else has made that
exactly
film.
Yeah.
And I mean, almost yearly, I feel, I watch Cabaret, and I watched it recently, only a few months ago, and there's just so many interesting things that he as a director does in that film.
Yeah, and he layers on meaning in a way that's
not heavy-handed.
Yeah, exactly. Interesting side note trivia on Bob Fosse is he was really good friends with Paddy Chayefsky. Their offices were across the hall from each other.
Well, that's interesting.
Yeah, and they would often go over and they'd read each other's stuff and talk about what they were working on and brainstorm and stuff.
Now, that would have been an interesting combination if you had a Paddy Chayefsky script directed by Bob Fosse.
It would have been fascinating, wouldn't it?
But alas,
they both died really young.
Well, yes. And one had, I guess in a certain way, you could say that they both had a hand in their own demise.
I guess you could say that. Yeah. Paddy actually died at 58.
He was also a playwright, right?
A playwright.
Author.
And a great, one of the great screenwriters. Network.
The Hospital.
The Americanization of Emily, The Hospital, Altered States.
Marty. I forgot that.
We can't forget Marty.
And that was also, that was a teleplay first, right?
Yes, Marty was a teleplay first. And I think he won an Oscar for Marty. So
what I was going to say is that in typical Teal and Jim fashion, we've gotten way off track. And that was right at the beginning, because All That Jazz was completely unplanned, but it sprung from the the intro. So there is something that I've been itching to talk about.
Yes.
Because there was a film that you had put on some of your memorable cinema-going experience from your youth. We haven't talked about yet, but, you know, here on Stuff We've Seen, we will.
We talk about stuff we've seen.
Yeah. Well, you know, we're not, you know, you could probably get your Marvel education from many sources. You're probably not going to get it here. But what you are going to get, I want to just sing a little few bars, see if people can recognize this. But get out of my dreams and into my car. Who's that lady? That's right. Summer 1988 was the year of a film that both of us have seen and seen recently again.
Yes. Yeah. I rewatched it.
License to Drive.
Starring the Coreys.
Yeah. The Coreys. So
Corey Haim and Corey Feldman were a duo, kind of a low rent Hope and Crosby.
Yes, acting tour de force, and it's certainly on display in this film. But I'm going to kind of let you drive this story because
I'll tell you my experience of seeing this movie.
Yeah, tell me about it.
So if you were into movies in the 80s and 90s, the video store was a big part of your life.
True.
And it was such a big part of my life that I worked there and all my friends worked there. So my friend Steve and I, Steve worked at the video store, and we usually worked like the 4 to 12 shift, which meant that during the day we could go to a matinee. And so every Friday we would go to the local multiplex and see what was coming out that day.
You mean this wasn't a college campus story?
No, not a college campus story. This is a multiplex story. We went to the multiplex, and I think theaters still do this, but, you know, the first 100 people or so that show up, they get some little promo item.
Oh, yes. Posters and
exactly.
Keychains.
So we showed up at noon to see License to Drive. And we were like, okay, it's the Coreys, whatever. We knew what we were getting into.
And this is opening day?
Opening day. First show, opening day. We got our little Corey Haim license was the promo item.
That's actually, see, I mean, just recently we watched the movie. That's an awesome promo gift.
Yes, it's an awesome promo gift. So we go into the movie, and it's just not great.
Wait, was the theater busy? Like, you know, I can't imagine.
There was nobody there. And this theater, they wouldn't run the movie unless there was somebody in there. So as soon as we bought tickets,
they had to run it.
They have to call up to the projection booth. Okay, we got to run License to Drive. And so we were the only two people in the theater.
Really?
We were the only two people in the theater. And we were bored by the film. And so we started to kind of make fun of it a little bit. And we got a little silly and we started laughing at stuff. And the film has some funny bits. It actually does have some funny bits, mostly in the side characters. But we were not that impressed with the movie. So we go into work that afternoon. And we start telling people, we went to License to Drive. And people were like, what? You guys went to see that? And we go, oh, yeah, it was amazing.
Yes.
So we start talking it up, how it's this great film. And in fact, it's so good, we're going to go see it again the next day. And so we tell everyone this. Then the next day comes around, and we actually decide to follow through on it.
No. Well, why would you? Because Did you go there hoping like that you'd see some of these people and you just wanted to prove to them that you thought it was so great you would go see it again and it was an elaborate gag?
It was sort of like a game of chicken, right? We were like, who's gonna back out of going to see LTD again?
I love it. You've already given it the
We were all already LTD. Calling it LTD. Oh, LTD, man. You got to see LTD. So we go see it again on Saturday. I think there's like 6 or 8 people in the theater now. Nobody's really laughing or enjoying it. We go back to the video store. We tell everyone it's so good we saw it twice.
Now you're really cracking me up.
2 days later, we're driving around town.
Oh, no.
I'm in Steve's car. He's driving.
No.
I didn't even have my license. I was in high school. He was in college. We're driving around. He pulls into the multiplex.
No.
We're going to see License to Drive.
That's awesome.
So we go see it again. And then it just snowballed from there. We ended up seeing it 7 times.
What?
Yes.
Okay, so this is a good story because this is not what I could have imagined. You were going to tell me that you saw LTD 7 times.
We saw LTD 7 times in the theaters because we just kept going as a joke. Now, here's the thing. By the 5th, 6th, 7th time, this movie's hysterical.
Well, that's what's funny is because you probably know some of the good lines and then you know all the bad lines.
Oh, yeah, no, and we were quoting lines to people at the video store, God giveth and the DMV taketh away, one of the great lines in this movie. And there, I said before, the side characters, the guy who administers the driving test.
With the coffee?
Parents, they have the good sense to cast Richard Mazur and Carol Kane as the parents. The woman at the DMV, the old drunk guy. These side characters are pretty interesting and kind of funny and get some laughs out of it. The main story with the Corys is boring. It's just flat.
So I want to jump in.
Yeah.
I have no good stories like that. I was in the summer right before.
You didn't see LTD 7 times.
Yeah, I have not. I think I've seen it 2 entire times. One just last weekend and then maybe snippets here and there. I saw it, I think, opening night. It was a midnight show. Some friends were going to go see it, and it was only about a month before I was getting ready to go to college.
Right.
And so it was just one of those things to get together with some friends that I may not see very often.
Right, yeah.
And
just a movie, hang out.
Yeah, and so that was really what it was, and I would go to the midnight show quite often. I used to work at the movie theater, the multiplex, so sort of my video store, even though I also worked at a video store. But my friends were all at the movie theater. So going to a midnight show was kind of the standard, and you know, you just picked whatever was coming out that Friday. Yeah. So you know, we went and we saw it, and I have no great stories about the seeing of it, but I remember the start of the film, I thought, had the makings of a kind of a good dark comedy. For some of the things that you mentioned,
yeah,
with the, you know, the God giveth and the DMV taketh away, it reminded me, you know, I actually flunked my first driver's test.
Oh, you did?
I did.
Okay.
I aced the written exam, which you take to get your learner's permit where I grew up. And I had been taking the driver's ed lessons, and my parents made me drive everywhere during the 6-month probation period. And when you went with the driver's ed course, there were 2 different policemen that administered the test that you could get. One guy was a real ball buster.
Yeah.
You know,
like this guy in LTD.
He's the coffee on the dashboard type. And then the other guy was a kind of a Mr. Softy. Well, wouldn't you know, the day we go in, it just had snowed, and I got the real tough guy. And I'm the first one up. There was another kid in the back, and basically you would drive around, do some stuff. He'd stop, and then the other person would do the second half of the test, and you know, hopefully you both pass. So I get in first, and I'm all excited, and I'm all ready to go. And I'm driving, and this first turn, I'd stopped, and I'd looked left, and then I had to make a right turn. So as I'm making the right, the guy started to try to trip me up. And he says, weren't you supposed to look left back there? And I'm like, yeah, but I was. And so I look left as I'm turning. I overdo the turn. and I go right into the snowbank. I've been there because the road is now. This is a road we'd practiced. Like the driver's ed course made us practice this route because they knew this is where the test was going to get taken. And so I just, you know, I think it was one of those things. I lost my cool. I froze up, you know, like so Corey Haim does in the movie. He freezes up on the test.
He freezes. Well, he fails the written test.
You're right. And that was different than mine. I mean, he fails. And so he does amazing on the driving test under the, you know, the most extreme
conditions possible. He does incredibly well. And he's a really good driver.
And so I appreciate, like, immediately I had these flashbacks. I'm like, yeah, you know, getting your license can be this very nerve-wracking experience, because as soon as I hit that snowbank, the guy's like, pull over. And it sort of started, everything was in slow motion. I'm like, no. And then as I
And that's what happens in the movie. Is
I know.
He doesn't get his license. And then he's got a whole night that he's got to steal the car and go out on the town and have a crazy time.
Well, because there's this, you know, there's a girl involved. And,
there's a girl.
And she's like the super beautiful, never going to pay any attention to him. But through weird circumstances, she agrees to go on a date with him. Has to be for that night. He's going to have his license. Now he doesn't have it. And through all sorts of weird circumstances, the girl still wants to go on a date. So now he has to, you know, steal it. But the experience at the DMV, it just brought me back to when, as he's like flunked, everybody else is walking around going, I got my license. Yay. His twin sister has her license.
His
and I remember,
I
felt like a jerk.
Her boyfriend was a good side character.
That's the problem is, right? It works great. We got a great setup. He's got to take the car out. And now, you know, craziness is going to happen. And yet what happens, I don't feel was good enough.
No, it's boring.
The other Corey convinces them they have to go out to some like crazy wild place. And basically it's just a drive-in, and not drive-in movies, but like a drive-in where you drive your car in and get food.
Right, it's a drive-in restaurant. Yeah.
And that was it. And then I remember a time I was like, this is where I was losing interest in the movie originally. And then when the drunk guy came in and stole their car and wrecked it, I actually hated that, because I was like, you know, this is just me, even an 18-year-old. I was like, that guy could get someone killed. That's not funny. Drinking and driving isn't funny. When I watched
it, was in the 80s, I guess it was.
Well, yeah, I don't think they would make that kind
I don't think they'd get away with it now.
Yeah, because it's just, I mean, there isn't anything funny. Boys and girls, there's nothing funny about drinking and driving.
One nice thing about this movie, though, I'll say, as far as 80s movies go, is that the girl gets drunk and they don't take advantage of her.
No. No, well, they throw her in the trunk.
I know. They
trunk. They don't take advantage of her. Yeah, but I mean, they have more respect for
nothing,
her than.
There's nothing date rapey about it at all.
No. That actually, what's kind of interesting is instead of it being misadventures with her, she kind of gets put in the trunk she's not really in it. Like, it's not about, what are we going to do with this girl? Instead, it was more like, now we get to go to the drive-in, which is going to be really cool, and eat burgers or something.
Right.
But see, watching it again last weekend, I didn't mind the drive-in restaurant part, because I was thinking back and I'm like, you know, if you don't have your license and you're
the
like
drive-in
15,
is a pretty cool thing.
Yeah, things like that seem like that would be where the cool kids hung out.
Yeah.
So I started to think about it. I'm like, well, okay. And I still feel the same, where it's not necessarily the greatest movie, not super memorable. And
I think that's being really generous.
Well, I feel that one of the biggest problems, it was the two Coreys. They're not good actors.
They're not good actors, and they're flat and boring. There's not, they don't have a lot of personality, actually.
Like, a lot of times I feel like there were moments that you could almost see that the director was going, okay, now I want you to look this way, and then go jogging off. It's hard to explain, but then, like, the acting felt very, very wooden. You know, I watched it with my 10-year-old, and he got some laughs out of it. He liked it.
Okay.
But that's pretty funny. I like the concept of taking a film that's not very good, but you turn it into something by going to see it multiple times, and that's kind of how Rocky Horror started.
we would say it, exactly. I mean, we turned it into like our own personal little Rocky Horror for a couple of weeks there, and we would say the lines, we would giggle. It became really fun. But you know, I can't recommend this movie to anyone.
So, on Stuff We've Seen, we're going to talk at length about movies that we just don't want you to ever see. But of course, we probably piqued your curiosity if you haven't seen it. Now you're going to force yourself to go and watch it.
I'm trying to think of circumstances under which you would recommend this movie, and I can only think of one. And I'll probably say this on every podcast. If you're a subgenre completionist.
Right. If you have to see every Peter Hyams film in the library.
Right. You have to see every 1980s movie that takes place in a single night.
Well, I think that if you had your choice, you should see this over, say, Dream a Little Dream. In your Corey completionist theory.
Okay. Oh, if you're being Corey completionist, then you definitely need to. Lost Boys is where you begin.
Yeah, but this is definitely one that you can't say that you're a Corey completionist without seeing License to Drive.
No, you have to if you.
but you know what? You do bring up something, and I think that, you know, when we talk about License to Drive, this is sort of when we talk about the subgenre.
Yeah.
And maybe it's a subgenre we're creating, but it's kind of the nighttime adventure movie. And what I mean by that is, you know, there are a lot of films that take place in a day and a night.
Right.
There are films that are sort of coming of age nighttime stories like American Graffiti, mm-hmm. and Dazed and Confused and Can't Hardly Wait. Those are sort of a different animal. I'm talking about the sort of, you know, it has to do with a car or situations where you have to get out of jeopardy throughout an evening.
Right. And there's a series of sort of obstacles or situations that have to be dealt with. They pile on. One thing gets worse. Another thing gets worse one after another.
Yeah. And there's two movies that I feel are close cousins to License to Drive, but far better. One that's very close, it came out a year before that, was Adventures in Babysitting.
Yeah, which is a movie I will defend. I'm not going to defend LTD, but Adventures in Babysitting, I think, is a decent movie.
I think it's a little bit more than decent, except for maybe it gets a little bit too long at the end. There's a scene where the little girl that Elizabeth Shue's babysitting somehow gets on the outside of the building that her parents are at a party, and that's it's almost the bridge too far. But what I like about the film is very good character development,
mm-hmm.
and it's has a female protagonist, a hero, Elizabeth Shue. It's not just a guy-oriented teen film, which so many of them are. This is
it's also not. I mean, even though it has it as a subplot, it's not all about dating. It's not all about the boy.
Well, it starts off about the boy.
It starts off there.
I mean, that's how come she's babysitting. She's free to babysit because this jerky, you know, rich guy boyfriend of hers has given her the slip for the night.
Yeah.
And she does run into him later.
She does run into him later, but the film is about her and the kids, not about her and that guy.
And there's some, it's just some great repartee between her and the guy that she's babysitting, his younger sister, and then his best friend, which is actually the best friend, who's very funny in the movie, is played by Anthony Rapp, who's in Dazed and Confused, which we just mentioned a second ago.
Yep.
So I really like that. And then one of my favorites of this little mini genre from the 80s is
is there more than three films in this mini?
Well,
genre?
No, there's four. One is not. I'm not that great a fan of is Into the Night with Jeff Goldblum and Michelle Pfeiffer, but the one that I'm going to mention, and it's really one of my absolute favorite films, is After Hours.
Yes, Martin Scorsese.
Yeah. Now, did you see After Hours first run in the theater, or is this maybe you caught up with it on video?
I caught up with it on video. It came out on video while I was working at the video store.
Got it.
And so it was pretty popular. I watched it. I watched it a bunch of times, actually.
Which sometimes happens, like in the video store world, when I remember this, when I worked the video store, there might be those particular films that were great to have on at the video store.
Yes.
Sometimes just because you needed something in the background to pass the time. So there were certain films that like were ended up seeing like 10 or 15 times on video just because they were in the background when I was working there.
Exactly. Yeah. Although After Hours is rated R.
Yeah,
and
we
could only play R-rated movies, I think, after 11 p.m. at the video store.
Yeah, I can't tell you how many times I ended up seeing Mannequin on video.
No, we're not going to talk about Mannequin.
No, we're not. No, I really want to talk about...
But we are going to talk about Mannequin 2, which is a much better film.
Okay, we're not talking about Mannequin 2 right now. We're still going to talk about After Hours. You know, I had seen King of Comedy, but at the time I saw that, it was about seeing that film. It really wasn't about going to see Robert De Niro or Martin Scorsese. It probably took a year or two before I even knew that Martin Scorsese was the person who directed that film. And in 1985, I think that was my first real exposure to Martin Scorsese as a director.
Yeah.
And it's when I became a fan from seeing After Hours. I saw the preview and wanted to see the movie, and my mom wanted to see it too. So she and I went opening weekend and saw it. And my first reaction, and again, we talked at the beginning about movies that the first time you see something isn't necessarily the moment it clicks for you.
Right.
I called this film, it was sort of my own category, I called this a frustration film.
Because, the frustration. I've heard you talk about the frustration films before.
Yeah, because...
Where you're kind of stuck in something and can't escape from it.
Well, the character can't, and you can't.
I'm
almost, and maybe this is why I realized how effective the film was, is I felt very uncomfortable. I just kept on going, I want this guy to get out of the situation. I want him to go home.
Right. And it's almost in real time, which makes you feel more stuck in it.
Yeah. And, you know, it took me, well, I don't want to get ahead of myself, but one of the questions that I had in the film was, and I had no exposure to New York City at the time, but I was like, I know he has no money and, you know, he's lost his wallet and there's all these things, but he wants to go home. Why doesn't he just walk back to his apartment?
Right.
I actually thought that of as a little bit of a flaw. Now, when the film ended, and this is the first time I was watching it, by the time when it, that very end of the movie,
the last shot,
that is when it actually pulled me back. And I said, my God, that is brilliant. This is exactly how the movie needs to end. And it does. And that's when I walked out of the theater saying, I don't know if I really like this movie, man, but there was something about it.
Yeah.
But then I saw it, I think, less than a year later at a revival theater. My friend and I would always go. My friend, we called him Otis. That was his last name. So I always refer to him as Otis. My mom would frequently drop us off to this theater in Somerville. It's still there. And they used to show sometimes three or four different movies a day. And you could basically pay one price and see all four. And so a lot of times she would drop us off. We'd each have like a sub and we would get some candy and we just watch film after film.
Yeah.
And this particular time, I don't remember what the other movies were, but the first one was After Hours. And I think he had seen it too. And I don't think we were really looking forward to seeing it again, but we watched it. It wasn't very busy. And early on, Griffin Dunn goes on this date with someone he's met at a coffee shop, Roseanne Arquette. And this date starts off and he realizes this person who he thought was very interesting, she's a little off base. And she talks about having been married and that her first husband had this weird issue that he loved the Wizard of Oz.
Look, I stayed with my husband for 3 days. I was very young when I got married. My husband was a movie freak. Actually, he was particularly obsessed with one movie. The Wizard of Oz. He talked about it constantly. I thought it was cute at first. On our wedding night, I was a virgin. When we made love, you've seen the film, haven't you?
The Wizard of Oz? Yeah, I've seen it.
Well, when we made love, whenever he, you know, when he came, he would just scream out, "Surrender, Dorothy." That's all. Just surrender, Dorothy.
Wow.
Oh, instead of moaning or saying, "Oh God," or something normal like that. I mean, it was pretty creepy. And I told him I thought so, but he just couldn't stop. He just couldn't stop. He just couldn't stop. He said he didn't even realize it was happening. He just couldn't stop. So I just broke the whole thing off.
And that whenever right. he would orgasm, he would say, "Surrender, Dorothy." And Griffin Dunn's reaction, he's looking at her like, "This is not the date that I thought I was going to have." And then she's like, "And that was it. I had to get out of that relationship." And now he's thinking, "But you just got married and then you're out." And then she says, "I still love him. And he writes to me all the time." And he's like, "Check, please." And when this story was being told, I think the first time I watched the movie, I thought, like almost everything in the film, it was very disturbing. Because, you know, I was 15 and I had no real experiences like this. So I thought almost everything in this film was uncomfortable and disturbing. But when we watched it at this revival house, as soon as she said, "Surrender, Dorothy," some guy in the movie theater, and again, there was maybe about like 20 or 30 people, and this is a theater that held 900 seats.
Right.
I don't know exactly where you're sitting. This guy started howling with laughter. He was going nuts. And when he did, we started laughing. And it was almost like it was this invitation to say, this is a comedy, a dark comedy, and it's okay to laugh.
Right. It may be uncomfortable and weird, but the proper response to that is laughter.
And so suddenly, everything this guy's going through, that guy didn't stop laughing the entire film, and it just loosened us up. And since I had been on the journey once, and I know that, you know, I know what he gets out of all of these jams, I was able to really enjoy it. And then I just thought it was fantastic.
I've definitely had the experience before where I think I might be the only person in the theater who thinks it's funny. I think you and I may have had this experience together at one point.
I wish you could. Yeah, we probably did. I wish you had the movie, because
I know the movie.
What movie is that?
Man Bites Dog.
Sorry. You are correct. Man Bites Dog. What's even better is that we were with somebody that did not find the humor in that movie.
Who saw no humor in the movie. And we were cracking up through the whole thing.
He was repulsed by that film.
Oh, he was deeply offended and disturbed and upset. And I think more upset because we were laughing.
He was deeply disturbed, upset at us, I think, at the end of that, because he just looked at us after them and was like, what? And we were just like, this movie is brilliant.
Yeah. No, he just looked at us like, you people are really sick and amoral to think this is funny.
And yet that movie is very disturbing, and I have never been able to force myself to watch it a second time.
I have.
And did you still feel the same way, or is the reaction different?
You know, I actually found it more disturbing. I mean, it's still pretty funny. I think it's still pretty funny, but it's a really dark, disturbing movie. It's really upsetting.
I feel like there's been so many sort of takeoffs on that type of film since then. There hadn't been before. Yeah. I mean, that was like groundbreaking at the time, but the idea of a documentary film crew, you know, following a ne'er-do-well, but in this case, a serial killer. It's been done since.
It's been done since, but not with this amount of humor, I don't think.
No, I just not done as that as well. And of course, there's always something being the first. You're there before everybody else. So,
yeah. And the second time I watched it, what I hadn't remembered is what a slow build it is. How much time you spend with this character before he actually starts killing people.
Right, because what they are trying to do is get you to like
exactly
this guy.
Yeah. And get the filmmakers to like him, too. There's a whole thing about his relationship with the filmmakers and what their role is, how complicit they are in his murders, and I guess he's a serial killer. Yeah,
I hadn't thought about that movie in a while, and you were correct. That's a film where the right audience is going to give it a different reaction. And I wonder, you know, is it because, you know, we're just kind of these dark, humorous type of guys, or is it something where...
No, I think other people find Man Bites Dog funny also.
So, but did you think it's funny, or do you think that maybe even we were experiencing this too, that sometimes what we're watching is so disturbing and our reaction to it, the only way we can handle it is to laugh?
Well, yes, but there, I think that's a big part of it. But I think Man Bites Dog also is intentionally funny. Like, they keep killing off the sound guy. And it's basically a reference to Spinal Tap drummers. And so it is actually, it's intended to be funny. But it's really dark, really dark humor.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we talked about, you know, films that we wouldn't necessarily recommend to people, like License to Drive.
This I would only recommend if you really know what you're getting into ahead of time.
You got to kind of know the person and say, you know, check out Man Bites Dog, because it isn't for everyone.
No, in fact, it's for very few people, I would say.
But, you know, for you and me. And now I'm looking at our time. We got a couple minutes, but we're probably not going to get to a couple of things that I thought we were going to get to. And we can do that on the next episode.
Yeah, we will be back in a future episode to talk about License to Drive.
No, we got some other. we got plenty of other goodies to get to. Don't you worry. Okay. You know.
Well, until next time then.
Yeah. Just quick little housekeeping. Yep. Again, if you have any thoughts, suggestions, films that you'd like us to talk about. I can't guarantee we will talk about them, but you can send that along to feedback@jimandteal.com. And these episodes are now available on Apple iTunes and TuneIn. Is that what it is?
TuneIn, yes.
I'm not sure where else we may be found, but
iHeartRadio, are we on there?
No, there's something about that. Okay. I got to figure that one out.
Well, TuneIn and iTunes. Check us out.
Subscribe, and then you won't miss a single episode of all the excitement. We'll be bringing you tasty nuggets like License to Drive and who knows what other stuff. Until the next time, for stuff we've seen, this is Jim and
this is Teal saying see you later.
All right, everyone. Bye-bye.